we'll wait and let them exit the auditorium.
We're waiting in great anticipation for the heating and air conditioning system in the building to be eventually updated.
Are you guys hot? It's hot. He's a bit under. Are you cold?
Yeah, it's comfortable out here, but we're not wearing robes.
Okay, the segment they have exits will go ahead and call this case, Essing versus City of Fredda.
Thank you.
We're going to begin again. This is Essing versus City of Fredda.
Yeah, please support. My name is Tom Coley, and I represent the City of Fredda for this appeal. There are a number of kind of issues in this case that are all ancillary. I think two main issues. One is whether it was error in the district court to submit the issue of a public taking for or taken for public use to the jury for the decision. And secondly, whether the court erred in determining that the delivery of an envelope containing bills to the city clerk's office constituted a court claim under the court of subdivision still comes back. I don't know how much this court wants to go into the facts, which probably reviewed groups and are well aware of what happened. Sewer backups in 2010, just two. You know, if you're a homeowner, that's a lot of knowledge, but in this context of public taking law, two isolated.
Were there two or three?
I take that back. There are two that caused damage. There was a legend, but there was a third that was testified to by two of them. Plaintiffs, they're saying it was third and started to back up, didn't cause any damage, went back down. I think they did testify, they alerted the city officials to that, and I think one, some of them came
out. And was that the first one that didn't cause any damage?
That was the first one, and that was sometime, I think the testimony was July 9th. Then there was one on July 23rd, and then there was one on August 9th.
So would you agree that's different than Columbus, Henderson versus City of Columbus, where it was just a single incident?
No, I wouldn't, only in this context. I think when you look at the case law in the area of public taking has to be an event that, in essence, is a permanent. In other words, renders the property unusable for its intended purpose. You know, yeah, I suppose you could use it as an exaggerated example. Here are situations where the sewer backed up on the house once a week, and the city could do something about it, so they decided it would cost them too much money to do what they could do to fix it, and so they just decided to let it happen. That's occurring in this condemnation. The city is precisely in the parks and the sewage in that basement. That's not what's on here.
Although Henderson does refer to a lot of other cases, it's a temporary nature of the issue of the Arkansas case. Did not automatically exclude the bid.
I would agree, but I think when they look at the analysis, whether the payment was of a permanent nature or caused damage or damage loss, that's just not present. It was an isolated period of time. There's no evidence at the time of trial of any sense of the loss. I think there was some anecdotal evidence of going fire to that. So, but I think the real issue here is whether they go. I think this court decides when that Fontenelle case, which came down about 2 months after this trial, that was not something that you submitted to the jury. What we were just talking about, I think, has some bearing still because we believe that we can submit to trial. It would be sufficient for this court to say there just was no public reason. In this instance, you wouldn't have to send it back and have a district judge have a determination and repeat it. The error was the zero, And I think that, the judge, obviously, he gave the guidance from this court. That was, I think, that 6.8, that's a 6.24 Fontenelle Boulevard case, the first time that was actually decided in practice.
So you would see that would be one possible remedy. If the remedy with you is to send it back.
Well, I think it's a possible remedy, but I don't think it's an appropriate remedy on this record because I don't think there's anything that would be induced in the new trial It's not already in the record. In the record, it shows that case is 5-4 years after these occurred. There's no evidence of any backups after that. So they're living in the home, using them for the intended purpose. There was no permanent within any, meaning of that term, as it's been applied in dangerous violent nation slashes. There's no cases involving dangerous violent nation.
So you're saying the district court should decide that as a matter of law, when it's in all privacy?
That's correct. That's correct.
If it had, then the damage is being damaged.
Then the damage, you hear the damage, you're in desperate. And of course, when I'm speaking to the president, so that's part of the term. But, yeah.
So the damage is first, every lady was the damage stipulated to
on both grounds. That's the judge by the trials. The second one was the court. And the tort claim is even, more convoluted in my mind. The evidence on that was that Lauren Brogan, the father of Michael Fogel, one of the friends, and his wife, Kathleen Howard, who's the father of Michael, was asked Bob Walsh, happy to turn on that city clerk's office. And he said he did that because his father was on the name, Tisdale, who at the time was a deputy city clerk as a successor, and he's a deputy something, and she said, we just drop off the jail. And he did that. And they were apparently, we know that it was sometime before September 27th, because the sticky note on one of the bills sending them to an insurance company on the 27th of September. This is way back in 2010. Nothing happened, and they eventually became counsel. And counsel actually filed a tort in the normal form, a letter to the city clerk on behalf of all three of them. All three of the plaintiffs, more plaintiffs, but the three homes involved, on June 16th, I think it was, 2011, in the 1 year now that the court can catch required. Then the lawsuit was filed on October 16th of 2011, but in the lawsuit, the only cause of action alleged is interest in the nation. So it's not a claim, it's not a negligence under the court of action. That wasn't that put in until December 2014. So, 3.5 years later, 4.5 years that would be abandoned. And there were motions for summary judgment, and of course, this was the summary judgment was in response to that. And on the basis that, it shouldn't relate back, but it did relate back to the filing of the original complaint. 6 months had not elapsed from the filing of the court claim in September, in June of 2011. And the final of the lawsuit of October 2000, which is a statutory requirement under the tort claims act.
And the claim is not formally withdrawn.
Yes, and of course, the state law now is you don't have to formally withdraw. If I'm lost, until December 16th, 17th, then if the judge was correct and really fast, there would have been, it would have been appropriate to allow them that. So that, of course, was filed after a year almost after because of the inverse condemnation. And at the trial, the trial judge determined that should that happen, say that. The judge sustained the motion, as to two of the plaintiffs, because they had not done any condemnation. He overruled it and said there was a fact issue as to whether or not the programs had filed a court claim by delivery of the envelope to the clerk's office, that's August, September, whatever, there is no actual date to that in that, except that an outside date, not September, So that was facts. Tort claim case came back, filed that March of 16th, and the delay was by the PA, in the condemnation case that was not dismissed, because it wasn't final court, and then it came back. Well, the judge found that they had substantial explanation. The gist of our argument is that really the liberty of packet, the manila envelope didn't testify to the house was addressed. The delivery of the clerk's office for someone who was not the city clerk at the time directed him to do so was not substantially compliant with the clerk's
office. If instead of just the bills, if the claim form had been filled out with the bills, and so they come in and they say, this is the city clerk. Somebody says, well, she's not here, but I'll take it. if you hand it to the employee in the city clerk's office, wouldn't that otherwise
probably comply, Your Honor, if it's addressed to the city clerk.
The key is that the court claim has to be addressed to the clerk
or other person responsible for maintaining the official records. That's what the statute said. The court has, I'm sure you're aware of, there were several cases where the city authorities, the public body, got notice that Brothers versus Kimball County case, the CEO of the hospital was given the claim, he wasn't the person responsible for maintaining official records. Justin versus Holtrust, again, the letter was written, the doctor complained that the employee of the county hospital complained about malpractice. He wasn't the right person.
But here we actually have an employee in the city clerk's office. We do.
But the question, when you think about it, if the legislative director, was that the purpose and intent of the statute was to enact uniform procedures for bringing the court claims against all public subjects, and then the next statute, 13905, talks about what those claims have to consist of. Shall be in writing and shall set right in time and place the occurrence that is right or claim that such other facts certain of the framework is known to the claim. I don't think, I mean, if this, we're going to bless, I guess, the delivery of an envelope containing bills to a city office, as defined in the court claim, for all practical purposes. Anything to do with anything to do with. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chief Judge Miller, and honors. Mr. Cohen, may you please support. My name is Melanie Wittemore-Montios. I represent the applicants in this case, Michael Krogan, Renee Essen, Brandon, and Amanda Hammond. My clients were homeowners on Meadow Lane in Bretman in July and August 2019, and they were experienced three civil backups. In fact, the Fogarts and Ms. Edson, after July 23rd, had just got done having the basement cleaned out. They were in the process of getting them repaired when the second backup, or the third backup, causing more damage. They've been waiting 6 to 8 months to be reimbursed for this. At a time when the DeCanters utility employee told them when that has occurred, this is the city's fault. Don't fill in that. It still hasn't happened. The issues before you are whether or not this matter should be put before the jury. And
given the hot mail case, my understanding came down after the trial.
Like within weeks.
how can we sit here and ignore that this precedent now says this question should have been a question of law?
Number one, 6225 is an appeal from summary judgment. It wasn't a question of whether or not it's an issue to go to the jury or not. Number two, the question that was answered in 6225 was not whether or not the applicant can have that role for two results. Instead, the question was whether the government's action in placing a gas regulator station near property with a safety project caused a direct, substantial, and peculiar burden on the property. That's what was addressed in 6224. The facts of this case fit within the first means of causing damage to the discussed in that case, and that is the physical intrusion into the home. Not an intangible intrusion, as was suggested in 6225. That one was about the gas regulator station that was next to the property, not on the property, and the idea that it had
I think it makes a difference because foreseeability is uniquely a factual question that can be determined by the jury,
and I would point you in the direction of A. Government versus County, Lancaster County Schools. In that case, the board decided that whether or not something was foreseeable was something that was uniquely a factual question that the jury could decide. It was based on common sense, on common experience, and applications of standards and behavioral norms. Additionally, nowhere in 6224.9 is there discussion of prior Nebraska Supreme Court cases in which they have talked about the inverse condemnation questions going to the jury. And those issues included foreseeability in Schmidt versus Schmidt, causation in Baum versus County of Tesla. What are the impairments to public streets was unreasonable? That's two cases, W Trucking Lines and State, or Abala versus State. And whether or not the improper construction or operation of the drainage ditch caused damage, and that's more than just grass for these airports. So I think there's a body out there for these questions, these factual questions, for the jury to decide.
But how do you respond to Mr. Putnam's argument that there was no permanent damage and therefore there can be no public damage?
I think that's incorrect. I think if you look at the Henderson case and what they talk about other cases, it doesn't have to be a permanent damage of a home for there to be legal damage. If there's been repeated backups, as it was in this case, that is sufficient to show that there's been damage to the property.
But does it have to be permanent? It can be just temporary.
I think it can be temporary. It doesn't have to be. And even if you were that this is not a jury question, I tend to agree with Mr. Copeland that it's a decision you can make, but not that the decision you can make. I think it's a
decision. Do you think the record is sufficient and not sufficient for us to come to our own conclusion on that issue?
I do, and here's why. I believe the record contains evidence that shows that there was enough information for these two backups to be able to see up the results in plenty of practice. That's based upon the way they go to grow their sewer systems. They have light hiker virtual as a weapon. They had a list of farm animals that they would go out and check on a daily basis. So if their flow was good, they left them alone. If it was bad, they would jet. They did not have a routine method to jet and to inspect their sewer. This started back in 1975 where they developed the problem with them. By 2010, by 15 number was they knew that if someone backed up into a home, they should tell a vital line as early as 2001.
But other than these three dates, had there been any other prior incidents for any time close, other than these, on Meadow Lane,
these three are the only ones that we are aware of. But our expert testified that if there's a problem down the gravitational line, the sewer line, it can affect the sewer line going on. Meadow Lane was at the top of the center. There were three problem manholes down the sewer line that were not fixed or repaired in this case. In fact, in 2006, there was a problem on the Cherokee Drive, which is like one street over from Meadow Lane. There's three entries they have where they jet it and they cut loose. They didn't add it to their problem manhole for whatever reason. And they also knew that if they had pipes that were cracked or missing or joints that were missing line, they needed to be repaired, maybe back to 2004. And as you mentioned, there was a small sewer backup into their pipe on July 19. Granted, it didn't cause damage, I think it was mostly liquid, but it was enough to cause two of the homeowners to call plumbers. And one corner said to advise my public, this is not a phone on your line. You contacted the city, and all they did is not move. Looks like a phone will get us. No, that's all they did.
Is there any evidence that these occurrences diminished the market value of the property?
There's not, because the party security can't.
So, looking at Henderson, you know, talking about when the property's damaged, they're kind of showing that it's been damaged in the sense that the market value of the property has been diminished, and there's no evidence of that.
There's not enough of that because the party security can't.
I think part of the problem is, and I think they toss us around a lot in Henderson, right, is the public use aspect of the taking spot.
Right.
And so to rise to that level as opposed to being an accident, unfortunate situation that you usually couldn't have expected, it has to be more specific. But I think there is language for Henderson. You know, they talk about the time and duration of the problem, but they say that certainly the accident and consequent damage served no purpose because it wasn't a long-term problem. But in essence, Bretta, you alluded to the fact that they do this sort of quasi-moral trade. So maybe that is enough, if that's what their process is, that they're constantly flooding in basements because they're not incorporating more reliable supply. If there's evidence of that, that might rise to the rise of it affecting the public in a greater degree. Then we're talking about few homes.
Right, but I think it's sufficient because the way they take care of their kids is to keep one on the back, like a few, or a single. It only takes one.
And I mean, maybe they have recourse, but maybe it's not through inverse combination, not through constitutional.
With all due respect, I disagree. I think this case is different than Henderson. In the case, in the way that Henderson was, that single backup that could not work, but it had never happened before, they didn't expect it. In this particular case, the way they made doing that choice put them on notice that they were likely to have more backups because they did not take care of their system.
Isn't the torts claim
It's an additional one. And I think if you look at Henderson, we talk about it. There are three ways that they can recover from the inverse combination, joint enforcement orders, are both adequate ways of getting
it.
Could you address the sufficiencies?
I sure can. I believe that the tort claim needs to be final in the court's office. Not specifically deliberate. That's not what it says. And if you look at the documents,
doesn't the statute say to the person who's responsible for maintaining the rent? Exactly.
I think it says filed, but I could be wrong. I'm not gonna die on that. But it's not a matter of the bill. The stuff that was submitted to the clerk's office shows the address, the date, the occurrence, and this is something that the city was well aware of and involved. But there was substantial compliance.
This is substantial compliance. I told them this. Mueller versus the City of Pavilion Supreme Court case from 2008, and it was actually dealing with a wage method compared it to the court. And it talks very clearly about the rigid requirements procedurally in terms of who you file it with, right? Substantial compliance comes in only if there's a question about the content of the notice itself. But as far as that is smaller requirements, who you have to file it, it's very clear. It has to be specific. I know there's cases where maybe equitable stop at Q because they took it in and someone said it in the right place and will take place. Judge Purtle experience. That might get you a pass. But I don't know that there's that evidence in that case.
But I think that this case is different than those other cases in the past. And that this was looked at the clerk's office. It's not something where it's going to the CEO and that would be the right one and the right house was in the same case that Mr. Hilton was like, yeah, that's not what, yeah. It's not that. This was open to the court. And that was it. I say I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, how much time do you take?
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.